From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Tonight, our JFK assassination program. Stand by for that. And here's what's happening. Oh, boy, more Americans will use food stamps to buy their Thanksgiving dinner this year than ever before, according to a new report from a not-for-profit government watchdog group. It's called the Sightlight Foundation. The Food Stamp Challenge, which challenges higher income families to live as if they are on food stamps, estimates that a person on food stamps has a budget of about $1.25 a meal. In other words, a family on food stamps must buy an entire meal per person for less than the cost of an average cup of coffee. How in the heck do they do that? Hostess Brands must return to a liquidation scenario after mediation with its bakers union failed to avert a shutdown that may eliminate more than 18,000 jobs. The judge overseeing the Twinkie makers' bankruptcy made all that public today. So it looks as if Hostess is going to go down the tubes after all. Militants took their fight with Israel into the heart of the country, exploding a bomb on a public transportation bus in Tel Aviv. The attack is likely to complicate already strained efforts to achieve a ceasefire there. The blast injured 22 people, shook up the Israeli public, and drew immediate condemnation from world leaders. Jerry Corsi, WorldNet Daily, with us. Jerry, this thing's not going away. I thought it would, but it's not.
It's not, George. And as we discussed before the election, the tensions in the Middle East were pretty much bound to spill over into violence after the election was over. And right now the question is whether or not the truce will hold.
What would make Hamas get onto a bus, attempt to blow it up, attempt to kill people when they're in the middle of all this stuff?
That was a provocative act, especially to expand the violence merely from firing rockets into Israel, which is frightening enough now that they can reach Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, but also to explode a bus, an act of terrorism, really, especially as the truce was being negotiated, was very provocative. I mean, we've seen Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Prime Minister of Egypt, Morsi, really intervene and try to really bring some reason to the situation. Clearly, if Israel involved itself in a land incursion inside the Gaza, we would have a dramatic escalation of the violence. And I'm not certain that that's not going to happen yet in the near future, especially if Hamas continues to fire rockets into Israel.
And, you know, Jerry, we're not hearing much about Iran right now. How come?
Well, and again, George, the rockets that were being fired were manufactured in Iran.
Right. Right.
Which means that they had to have been brought in through Egypt, which brings, again, another escalation of the potential for violence in the Middle East, because Iran remains a major force behind the terrorism, also with Hezbollah and Lebanon, supplied by Iran, and the violence continuing in Syria. The Middle East continues to be a tinderbox.
Jerry, you have a happy Thanksgiving with you and your family. Okay,
thank you, George, and the same to your great audience.
Jerry Corsi. Federal law enforcement agencies soon may have their hands tied when it comes to assessing your email and other personal data if a new bill currently making its way through Congress becomes law. Laws governing the privacy of your emails were drafted in the mid-1980s, long before AOL and Gmail, but efforts to update those rules have some fearing the government's fingers will be flipping through their digital mail. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairperson Patrick Leahy has drafted a substitute bill for the Electronics Communications Privacy Act, which was originally written in 1986, long before things like electronic archiving and storage came about. The update, which will be under review next Thursday, modernizes rules for police seeking to obtain private email for investigative purposes. Lauren Weinstein with us as he watches the Internet for us. What do you think of this one, Lauren?
Yeah, it's actually not cut and dried yet. The problem is that at the same time that there are these efforts to update the ECPA, the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, to better control when the government has access to your stored email, because right now it depends on how old it is, it depends on where it's stored, it depends on whether or not you've opened it. There's all these different parameters. There's already pushback on the moves to close those loopholes from various law enforcement agencies and such, who say that the way it is right now isn't lax enough, that they actually want more access to people's email, not less. And it's very hard from the outside right now to know what's going to come through the Senate, because depending on who you talk to about this, Senator Leahy has taken different stances on this. There's different versions of the legislation. There's different drafts. It's still very fluid, and no one really knows what's going to come out. So this is not a situation. For a while there, it looked like this was going to be a really good, you know, we're going to get this cleaned up and we're going to have more privacy on our email kind of situation. And it may still turn out that way, because obviously the controversy over General Petraeus has driven more action on this recently. But this is not a sure thing, and it's quite possible that at the last minute it'll go the other way, because there are very powerful interests who want to have more access to our email and not less.
And there's also plans afoot for governments to try to take over the internet, isn't there?
Oh, there's. I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings right before a holiday. I mean, everybody, please have a happy Thanksgiving. But in a couple of weeks now, the International Telecommunications Union, the ITU, which is part of the UN, is having some meetings in Dubai, UAE, where, to put it in the simplest terms possible, they basically want the UN to take over the internet. Now, you know I don't cry wolf on any of these issues. But this is something that has, you know, everyone that's worked with the internet for a short period of time, a long period of time, absolutely up in arms, because what the governments want to do, and this is largely being driven through a secret process at the ITU. The ITU has long been setting telecommunication standards and things like that. But it's a secret process, and we're basically learning things by leaks. It's largely being driven by Russia and China, who want to have, instead of the multi-stakeholder model that's been running the internet up till now, they want the national governments to have complete control through the UN in such a way that they could easily impose censorship and other kinds of oppression on the internet. If they succeed in doing that, the internet could turn into a mechanism for suppressing freedom rather than promoting freedom. Now, there is an effort now to make it clear that this is not something that's acceptable to people. Google just opened up a new website that explains what's going on, what people can do about it, and how to fight against this. And I have a link to that I've just put on my vortex.com, V-O-R-T-E-X.com website. It's in red. It says, "Stop the UN's ITU takeover of the internet." And if people are interested in learning about this and what they can do, I'd recommend going there and reading about this, because this has been percolating for a long time, and now it's really a serious situation.
All right. Enjoy Turkey Day, Lauren.
You too, George. Everyone have a good Thanksgiving.
Super. And as you know, we'll have a live program for you on Thanksgiving night. Those of you who spend the Friday following Thanksgiving doing things like spending time with your family or working or volunteering or attempting to construct the world's greatest turkey leftover sandwich, Black Friday devotees are a mystery. An estimated, now get this, 147 million Americans plan to go shopping sometime this weekend, according to the National Retail Federation. But we shall see. Of course, they're looking for a great retail season. Let's see if they get it. How muscular you are as a teenager may predict how long you live, at least if you're a man. Swedish experts who tracked more than a million teenage boys for 24 years found that those with low muscle strength, weaker leg and arm muscles, and a limp grip were at increased risk of early death. City of Dallas will mark the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy next year with a ceremony featuring the tolling of church bells, a moment of silence, and readings by a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian. The commemoration on November 22, 2013, will take place in Dealey Plaza, where Kennedy's motorcade through downtown Dallas was passing as those shots rang out. The ceremony will begin at 12:25 p.m. with the church bells across the city, followed by a moment of silence at 12:30 p.m., the time of the shooting. I was 13 years old when this all happened a long, long time ago, and always remember Walter Cronkite.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas, but we do not know to where he has proceeded. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th President of the United States.
Cronkite broke down then. He took his glasses off. He was teary-eyed. It was quite a sight to behold. This country probably has never been the same since. The Warren Commission that investigated the president's death concluded that Lee Harvey Oswald fired at Kennedy's motorcade from the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository. They concluded he acted alone. But did he? Up next, Michael Cohen joins us. We'll be talking with him about his work on the JFK assassination next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Two special guests for you tonight as we talk about the JFK assassination. You're going to be involved as well. Each other hour, we're going to take your phone calls. Michael Cohen this hour with us and next as well with your calls, a retired New York City High School social studies teacher. He's been doing research all of his life on different topics, but the Kennedy assassination has been the most important. He was just 20 years old when President Kennedy was assassinated. Michael, welcome to Coast, Michael.
Thank you, George. George, you mind if I ask you a few questions about the Kennedy assassination?
Yeah, you can interview me, and then it's my turn with you. Go ahead.
Okay. It's the 49th year, of course, of his assassination. George, how many books have been published about the Kennedy assassination in the last 49 years?
I would say too many.
Yeah, right. Can you give me a number?
Oh, at least 20, 25, minimum, I'm guessing.
Five books? How about 6,500?
Oh, my gosh.
I got that from Amazon.com, by the way.
That's amazing.
Now, how many books do you think have been published about Lee Harvey Oswald in the last 49 years?
Probably the same amount, maybe?
No, 3,500.
Okay, close.
Okay, how many books have been published about the Warren Commission in the last 49 years?
Maybe 1,000?
2,000.
All right.
How many books have been published about LBJ being the prime instigator of the assassination? Blaming him. How many books on him, you think?
Maybe 100?
180. Close. Very close.
How am I doing?
Very good. So we're up to about 12,000 books.
I can tell you're a teacher.
Yes, yes. 12,000 books, in my opinion, a totally waste of time. Totally useless. People don't know. Even today, people ask what happened, who killed them. 12,000 books, they don't answer the questions. So my whole life, I'm going through this business saying, what is the truth? What really happened in this assassination? And I think I uncovered it, maybe 80% of it. I don't get 100%, but I think I've covered most of it. I could fully document it from New York Times articles, which, by the way, were declared secret by the Warren Commission. A lot of this, believe it or not, a lot of newspaper articles and magazine articles were declared secret, though they don't tell you that. They keep that quiet. We know there's millions of documents out there that are secret. All right, let me tell you how I got involved with the woman who killed Kennedy.
All right.
Remember Madame Nu, by the way?
Vietnam.
The Dragon Lady?
Vietnam, right?
Yeah, Vietnam. Do you remember? I don't know. I'm older than you, but do you remember
the gosh.
Story?
I was 15 years old, I think, Michael. Right
okay,
around.
You don't remember the stories. Okay.
No.
All right. Well, by the way, that's all planned. You're not supposed to remember this. It's all censorship. Since the assassination, her name has been obliterated from the history books. And, you know, they keep people in ignorance about this. But I got to it. I got the information on it. And basically, the way I found it was I went to the public library. All my work is done in the public library, by the way.
All right.
Stuff is in there. The documents are in there if you know what to look.
So what you're saying, what you're going to tell us tonight are things that you piece together. Is that right?
Right. That's correct. Okay. Basically, it comes from the New York Times, November 1963, about five articles in the New York Times. It's all based on that. And it's based on what this woman did, who she saw, what happened, who she talked to, like you trace a criminal, you know, your forensic test and everything. And the evidence in these documents, as far as concerned, I think is absolute, that this woman, Madame Nu, she came from Vietnam, instigated this plot, basically all by herself, in a plot that involve most of the government officials involved, different agencies and everything, and the end result was the death of President Kennedy. She did this all in 20 days. I don't think James Bond in any movie could do what this woman did.
No, I don't think so either.
It could do something like this by herself. And I'll go into some details about this. 20 years of age, I was in college. I heard about Kennedy's death. My generation was greatly affected by it. Well, your generation, too.
Mine, too.
Okay. We never recovered from it. Over the years, I started buying books, conspiracy books that were coming out. I call it the JFK assassination industry. They keep pumping out these books every few weeks. Okay, so I'm reading these books as the years go by, and I see something's wrong with these books. It doesn't make sense. And what doesn't make sense is that I remember before Kennedy was killed, there were reports in the news about a woman, a very angry woman, who wanted to kill the President of the United States. And I couldn't remember a name, though. This is like 10 years afterwards or 15 years afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I'm in the public library doing some work for my school, and I see the microfilm section. I said, hey, what do I got to lose? Pull November 1963 out of that, the film on that. By the way, you can't do this on a computer today. Even with all our advances, the microfilm is still better. So I took that microfilm out, put it in the machine, and I said, let me see if I could find that woman, that name of the woman, and what she did. So I started on November 1st, nothing. November 2nd, nothing. November 3rd, I nearly jumped out of my seat. There she was on the front page of the New York Times. Not only one article, five articles about her. And you say, well, why did the New York Times honor her? I guess it's an honor to be on the front page of the New York Times.
Yeah. Why'd she be on the front page of the New York Times?
The day before, she held a live press conference on television and threatened to murder the President of the United States. That was enough to... Yeah.
Was she in Vietnam at the time, South Vietnam?
No. She was here. If she was in Vietnam, she would have been killed. Kennedy ordered her death.
She held a news conference, threatened to kill the president, and was never arrested for this?
Oh, that, not only never arrested, well, they erased her memory. Oh, yeah. That's correct. A matter of fact, the Warren Commission labeled her as a suspect for what she did on this news conference. But that was kept secret for 30 years. Her name doesn't appear in the 26 volumes. It only came out in 1993 after a few thousand pages were released. Remember after the Oliver Stone movie came out?
Right, I remember that.
So there's a lot of complaints about all these millions of documents. So they released a whole about a few thousand documents. And then, of course, the media at the time said, oh, look, there's no conspiracy here. But they lied because they accidentally released her file. We didn't know she had a file with the Warren Commission. And you can look it up, by the way, on the internet. You look up John F. Kennedy assassination records on Google, and you'll get to the National Archives and put her name in there. You'll see the stuff. The problem with her file was it was censored. It was only 10 items in the file. And, oh, by the way, in the file, it says she's a suspect. Actually says that.
This is an amazing revelation to me.
I'm telling you. It's amazing. Was the assassination industry cannot report this. They're under orders not to talk about this. That's why to you it's amazing. To me, I got this stuff out. I could document all this. It's very easy to document this stuff. All right, now in the file there were 10 items. None of the newspaper articles I talked about were in that file. There were hundreds of articles on this woman. None of it was in there. All it was sketchy reports, some seaman in Turkey heard from somebody Madam New killed him or something, some stupid things like that.
Well, explain this to us, Michael. Who was she exactly?
Okay, Madam New, I was going to get to that whole business. Madam New ran South Vietnam along with her husband, President Diem, and his brother-in-law, Nu.
Ah.
The three of them ran South Vietnam. South Vietnam was always a big problem for us, especially in the early 60s. And what happened was you had a Catholic minority, 10% of the population, sitting on top of 90% who were Buddhists and mistreating them all the time.
Right.
And there was always problems with that situation. So she was the leader. The husband was the president. She was the first lady, but she dominated everything. She was in control. of the situation. Eventually, that power led to a conflict with President Kennedy, and in the end, President Kennedy paid the price. This was a woman you did not cross. She was a tough woman, a strong woman, a combat veteran. In Vietnam, she was always under the gun. She had an army of 25,000 women soldiers protecting her. Just tell you what's going on. She didn't trust anybody, even her own army. In her obituary, I found one thing just recently. It never ends.
Hold on for a second, Michael. We're going to hit this quick break, and we're going to come right back to you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're with Michael Cohen, who has put together some pieces here of a puzzle that I did not see before. This is fascinating work, Michael.
Okay. By the way, if you Google Madam New's name, you'll see a number of articles on her. There's a Wikipedia article on her that's pretty accurate. Doesn't tell the whole story. And also the New York Times, when she died last year, did a big obituary on her. That's worthwhile to read, too. I was getting back to her
personality. She spells
that
N-H-U, right, her last name?
Yeah. Madam, M-A-D-A-M-E-N-H-U.
Okay.
Yeah, Google that. You'll see Wikipedia, and then you'll see the New York Times obituary, along with all the other obituaries.
Okay.
Anyway, let me get back to her personality. See what's, she was no Marilyn Monroe. Let's put it like this, she was a tough cookie, according to what I've read about her. For example, one of her generals, when she was running South Vietnam, threatened to kill her husband and make her his mistress. So she heard about this, and one day she's at a party, and that general was at the party. So she goes up to the general and says to him, "If you try this, I will personally rip your throat out."
Jeez.
This is what she told the general, and that, well, no more problem with that general. I'm just trying to explain what Kennedy was up to. In the summer of 1963, 4 months before Kennedy died, Kennedy and her got into a death struggle, a struggle for power and control that could only end in the death of one of these people. And it ended the death of Kennedy. Let me just give a little background of what happened. We had 30,000 troops fighting in Vietnam at the time. They were dying, being wounded, although we didn't call it a war. It was costing us $1 billion a week to run this thing, to save that governance. Catholic government there was in danger of collapsing. The communists were, Viet Cong were getting more powerful. And the Madam New came up with an idea, but I think it might have came from the Vatican because she was Catholic. And her plan was she got to convert the 90% of the Buddhists to the Catholic religion. And the way to do it is you burn down their temples and kill off their monks. A simple process. Then the Buddhists would have to convert and become, Catholics.
Okay.
So she started this program. And when it started, President Kennedy got very nervous about this because the United Nations started getting involved with this business. Saying, what's going on here with the Buddhists here in South Vietnam?
It's almost like genocide, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. By the way, her own father said that she was totally insane. This is her father. She was born a Buddhist, and she converted to the Catholic religion. Her father was a Buddhist, yet she turned on the Buddhists and murdered them by the thousands. Anyway, so the Buddhists at this point, wanted to protest. The way they protested is, you may have remembered this, they burned themselves in the streets of Saigon, the monks. They poured gasoline over themselves.
That's right. They would sit down and burn themselves. That's right.
You remember those pictures? I don't know if you remember it.
I sure do. I'll never forget them.
Right. So they, they had photographers there taking pictures. These pictures went all over the world. Kennedy is getting nervous now. He's really upset, what's going on with this family and what Madam Du was doing. So he starts threatening them, and he says, "You got to stop this." Madam Du says, "Mr. President, you cannot tell me anything. This is an independent country. I could do what I want." As the monks were burning themselves, she started making wild statements. She said these burnings, she called them barbecues, and she made statements like, "The next time a monk wants to barbecue himself, I'll bring the mustard." This went all over the world. These statements from a ruler of a country, this is unbelievable. Even the Ayatollah Khomeini, couldn't match this stuff. So a couple more statements were, "The next time a monk burns himself, I'll bring the gasoline and the matches." Or, "The next time a monk burns himself, I'll be clapping my hands." Kennedy went nuts, and he threatened her. And he says, "Shut your mouth, We don't need this. This is going all over the world. You're embarrassing us. America's fighting here, trying to save your government. And again, she says to Mr. Kennedy, I don't have to take orders from you. We are the legitimate government here in South Vietnam. 10% of the population, you know, is the legitimate government.
Well, where's her husband at the time, DM?
The husband kept his mouth shut. She did all the work. He was in the background.
He's the president, but she's doing
all the work. He's the president, DM, yes. He's the background. She did all the work. She's out front doing all the work. Okay, so he talks to her, not to the other two. Anyway, summer goes on. Summer 1963 goes on. This back and forth arguments with Kennedy and her. I call it a death struggle. In the end, one of them dies. Finally, towards the end of August, Kennedy says to her, a Donald Trump thing, Donald Trump, you're fired. He said to her, I got bad news for you, you three. You're out. Goodbye. Pack your bags. You're no longer the rulers here. Madam New shot back to him and said, you can't talk to me like that. I run this country.
Well, she was right, wasn't she?
Well, yes and no, because... she had a dictatorship. It wasn't a democracy.
No.
The voting was all fixed. You know, they never had an actual vote. It was all a joke. And it was a dictatorship, a Catholic-run dictatorship, by the way.
Well, that Diem got assassinated. Her husband got assassinated later.
We're getting
right?
to that. I'm getting to that, all right? Before I get there, I just want to give a few more facts. Yes, in the end, Kennedy ordered a coup through the CIA, and what happened was her husband... and her and his brother had their hands tied behind their backs. They were forced to kneel, and both of them were shot in the back of the head with rifles.
Is it true? Yes, it does. Is it true that Kennedy was shocked that they were murdered? I think, did he want them just out of the country?
Well, you see, that part I couldn't really prove. You know, we get all kinds of misinformation after that. My feeling was Kennedy wanted to kill Madam Nu. You see, those two, he wanted to get her, but luckily she was in America at the time on tour. He couldn't get her, so he got the other two. I think if she was there, maybe they just would have killed her, and the other two, they just would have said goodbye, you know?
Right.
That's my feeling about it.
Okay.
But she was the enemy. He hated her, and she hated him. Anyway, so in October of that year, she comes to America on tour. Now, at that point, she becomes a hero to the right wing in this country, the billionaire right wing. You know, you hear that today. The conservatives, Richard Nixon, they loved it. The Catholic Church loved this woman, and they hated Kennedy, who's the liberal, who's a communist, and whatever. So she felt if she comes to America and tours, she could get enough support among the American people to fight Kennedy, you know, make him change his plans.
Okay, and Kennedy must have been livid that she was here doing what she was doing.
Oh, at first he thought he could stop her by denying her an entry visa, but there was too many complaints. There was pressure put on. She had a lot of support in the government. I mean, this woman, like today, you know, some of these right-wing people, they worship this woman. She was out there fighting communism. This was a big thing in the Cold War.
It was huge. Huge then. Yep.
Yeah, right. Okay. So anyway, a month goes by. She has tremendous interviews. If you go to Amazon.com, you'll see pictures of her. Life magazine, Time magazine. Newsweek all had front page covers on her. She's a very beautiful woman, by the way, at that time. And she had press conferences all the time where they meet the press with reporters. And each time she denounced Kennedy and said, he cannot do what he's doing to my country. This is ridiculous. Comes November 1st, and the assassination of her relatives take place. Now the fun begins, all right? The Kennedy administration said that they committed suicide. See what I said?
Oh, with her hands tied behind.
Yeah. Even Houdini would have a problem, I think, doing that, right? Anyway, so Madam Nu holds a press conference. And in this press conference, what she was saying not she was going to threaten to kill the president. That's already been decided. So she's going to make him pay.
Did she have money, Michael? Was she a wealthy lady?
Billionaire.
Okay.
That's why she was able to pull off this conspiracy within the government, the payoffs. Yes, unlimited amount of funds. That played a big role in the way things were handled. We have a corrupt government, I hate to say it. Money talks. And she knew that. And, anyway, I'll talk about Richard Nixon in a minute. I just want to talk about this business with this death thing here. It was in the New York Times. The transcript was on November 3rd edition, the third page. And it goes on and on. And, by the way, here, George... I'm going to give you the first sentence of what she said. I want your opinion of it.
Okay.
Whatever is done against Vietnam will be felt in America, too. How do you interpret that sentence?
Well, her husband had been already killed, right?
Right.
To me, then, it would be what you've done here, we're going to do here.
Uh-huh. To who?
I would assume Kennedy.
That's correct.
It sounds like she was talking to Kennedy.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And she goes on with, she never mentions Kennedy's name in here. She calls it the administration.
Right. She's a smart lady.
Very intelligent. Crazy, but very intelligent and very shrewd politically. She survived 10 years in Vietnam running a crazy country. She knew her stuff. All right, so she issues this death warrant over here, and it says in the Times here. Now, what I did next was I traced articles. There were four other articles on her in that month in the New York Times, and I went from article to article trying to place things together. A key article was a telephone call she got from her friend Richard Nixon.
Really?
And Richard Nixon, we know among the assassination people, he was there, right? You know the story. You want me to go over that a little bit?
No, he was in Dallas, wasn't he?
Yes. One day a year, out of 365 days, he was in Dallas the day Kennedy died.
And he hated Kennedy.
The Warren Commission asked him what he was doing there. Oh, I was on business. But there's another story. He was changing planes. What he was doing there was he was setting up his assassination teams. That's what he was doing. And Mr. E. Howard Hunt, as you know, was on one of those teams there in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, see, one of the problems these assassination books have is they all talk about this, you know. And also years later with E. Howard Hunt with the pictures of him, him at the assassination site. You know, we've been over this a lot. You've
and his deathbed confession. And
right. Deathbed confession. Now, these assassination books out there all mention that, but they can't go any further because there's a key they're missing. And the key they're missing is his relationship to her. This article proves that she was dealing with him. Now, this is what I think happened. She talked to him on this phone call, maybe on the phone call, and said, look, I want you to arrange the assassination of President Kennedy. I will give you unlimited amount of funds and money. You know where all the bodies are buried in Washington, you know, with these corrupt politicians and agency heads and everything. And you go to it. And she stipulated, though, there were two things that had to be done. The first thing was he had to die on November 22nd at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Why was that significant?
Well, because astrology. They went to an astrologer, and astrology played a big role in this. You've never heard of this before.
No, you're going to have to tell us that, too.
Oh, that's another story they don't want you to know about with astrology on this. And the other thing she told Nixon to do is he has to be shot in the head for obvious reasons, right? Her husband was killed that way.
Her husband was killed that way.
Yeah. Now, Nixon, I think, knew enough people to put this whole thing together between the CIA, FBI. Well, of course, you had Alan Dulles, who was kicked out of the CIA by Kennedy because of the Bay of Pigs. He hated him. She probably got him involved. He wound up in the Warren Commission to cover himself. And then, of course, J. Edgar Hoover hated him. By the way, J. Edgar Hoover sacrificed one of his agents, Lee Harvey Oswald, in the end. Oswald was an FBI agent. I'll get into that later if you have time to discuss that.
He was the patsy, as he said.
He was the patsy, but he was an FBI agent.
Right,
sacrificed
we'll
by Hoover.
Sure.
So my only problem is, I think what happened was he got in touch with Hoover and got in touch with Alan Dulles, and all three of them working together worked out this whole business, you know, in 20 days.
Now, they must have, if they were involved in this, Michael, they must have obviously hated Kennedy so much, they wanted him dead even before she came on the picture, right?
It's no secret Hoover's attitudes or the, Alan Dulles. That's well known, you know, about that. But they needed motivation. They had to have somebody to motivate them, you see? She was the motivation. On their own, they wouldn't do this.
Well, and they needed cash.
And the unlimited funds. Whatever the money took, whatever it was, they paid off. One of the things they set up here, here's another thing they don't want to talk about in the assassination books. President Kennedy's funeral was rehearsed 1 week in advance while he was still alive.
What do you mean it was rehearsed?
Ah, interesting story here. There's something. This is in the Warren Commission. I think it's Exhibit 1803. I went through this. I picked up interesting things like this that the other books will not talk about. All right. You saw the pictures of the funeral. You remember the funeral?
Yes.
You had a horses, caisson with the coffin on it, marching bands, thousands
little,
of soldiers.
Little John there saluting.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, all of that was rehearsed the week before. Yes, actually rehearsed. His funeral was rehearsed while he was still living. By the way, we just had a great election here, and they spent billions of dollars, you know, trying to fight for the position of president. I don't think the president does such a great job if, as one of the benefits is, they rehearse your funeral in advance.
Well, now, did Kennedy know that they were rehearsing this funeral?
I don't think he did. Or, well, they covered themselves. They lied. Let me explain what happened with this. I was reading the stuff in the Warren Commission on this, and there was a right-wing professor who was giving testimony before the commission talking about this rehearsal business. He says the collaborators, the conspiracy people, wanted Kennedy to have a great funeral. Something like, remember Ben-Hur or Cleopatra, those movies?
Yeah.
They wanted to hypnotize the public with such a funeral, they wouldn't think of what else was going on in the country, you know, whatever corruption it was. And he gave evidence that a rehearsal did take place. Now, the Warren Commission was in trouble because their only purpose was to prove Lee Harvey Oswald was not a FBI agent.
They were backing into that whole story.
Right. This story blows the whole thing wide open because that means the only way you can rehearse President Kennedy's funeral has to be from the highest levels. And Robert McNamara, defense secretary, was the only one who could have ordered it. That's his friend and buddy, by the way, McNamara at the time. So anyway, they got in touch with the captain who ran the funeral rehearsal, and they asked him, they said, why were you rehearsing President Kennedy's funeral in advance? And he said, no, we weren't doing that. We were rehearsing former President Hoover's expected funeral in advance. Apparently Hoover was sick at the time.
Uh-huh.
And then he says, the captain says, but when Kennedy was killed, we were ready. Everything was set up.
It was the same thing, right?
Yeah, but where they lied, let me explain where the game is on this. The cover story was Hoover's funeral, expected funeral.
Right.
Hoover did not die till a year later. You see? They thought, the Warren Commission thought that would satisfy the people and forget about this funeral rehearsal. But it was there. It actually happened.
Let me tell you, Michael, I don't believe in coincidences. And here you have Diem dying November 1st, 1963.
Oh, yeah, 20 days.
20-some days later, Kennedy dies. I mean, it's just way too close.
No, it's obvious. Oh, it's obvious there's a connection there.
So let's assume she goes to Nixon, who then goes to the folks he knows.
Right.
And they say, look, this woman is giving us a lot of money to get this done, and we need to do it. And so they simply, made a few hosts. So the names that we've always heard, the mob, the Rosellis, the Hunts, all these people, do you think they were indeed players in this thing?
All right, let me explain about the mob, mafia.
Okay.
On their own, the mafia would never have killed the President of the United States. These books, assassination books, are lying. You know, they try to show you they're having secret conspiracies, these are mafiosos, so to kill the president because of Jimmy Hoffa and all this stuff.
Right, and they want back in
the
Cuba.
The mafia is a very patriotic organization. It may be a criminal organization, but they respect the government. They would never do this on their own, except when they're told to be part of this.
Told to be part of it. That's right.
That's right. They're told to participate. That's how they got involved with this. But on their own, these assassination books keep saying that.
Well,
and the mafia, they did it on their own. No. They would not have done this.
And they're told to participate, Michael, by those who could make their life miserable if they refused.
Whatever the reasons, yes, whatever happened there. The Catholic Church was involved, too, unfortunately, in this. Madame Nu went to the Pope and started. She used some ideology. I'm talking about the law. This is the law of tyrannicide. T-Y-R-A-N-N-I-C-I-D-E.
Hold on, Michael. We're already at the top of the hour. We've got one more to go with you. We're going to take a few calls, too. But we've got so much material to cover here with you. The astrology. Why you say Oswald was an FBI agent? We'll get back to all of this in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.